Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday afternoon, and it is now time for Inside the Eye Live Prime Time.
Hey, Fetch. Hey, Fetch.
Quiet, quiet. Go ahead. She's asking a question. Don't be rude. Don't be rude.
Hey, Fetch, did that woman really say you have garnets of steel and a mind like a freaking laser?
Mary, you can't be asking questions like that. This is Inside the Eye Live Prime Time.
Why not? Aren't we broadcasting from the Middle East?
Well, yeah, but we might be seen as being politically incorrect.
You know, the problem is everybody dumps people when there's a sign of political incorrectness.
Etan, you're always politically correct.
Heck, thanks. Does that mean we can talk about dumping the Israelis tomorrow?
Oh, I'm sure you will probably say quite a bit more than that. And now coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, this is Inside the Eye Live Prime Time with your host, The Fetch.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Mary, from however Los Baños in the Republic of the Philippines. This is The Fetch, and you are listening to Inside the Eye Live Prime Time. Today's date is Thursday, January the 9th, 2020, and a good Thursday afternoon, early evening to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good late evening to early Friday morning to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. Of course, it's early Friday morning here in the Philippines. It's just a little bit after 7 o'clock in the morning. Daybreak locally comes at about 6:15, something like that. Of course, it changes by days. And so we're already nearing the end of our first hour of sunlight here. However, it's fairly overcast, so we're not seeing a lot of sunlight. It's kind of a fresh, refreshing air out there. Overnight lows saw temperatures dip down to 73 degrees, but that came sometime in the very early hours of the morning, because by 5 o'clock this morning, the temperature was already up to 76 degrees. Now, we will be hitting a high of 84 degrees today, which, interestingly enough, comes early at around 11 o'clock in the morning, and then that's going to hold steady throughout the day, and then it's not going to drop until after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, solar noon here, just for kind of interest's sake, that's the highest point at which the sun reaches up into the sky. That comes at 11:57 in the morning, while sunset locally is going to be at 5:35 in the afternoon. That gives us some 11 hours and 22 minutes of sunlight here in this part of the world. Now, we had some patchy rain come through this evening. Sometimes, though, that seems to be actually kind of like a nightly event lately. It's kind of nice to have it come through, though, because it really freshens up the air and makes some of the humidity at least feel less humid. Humidity right now is about 77%, close to 80%. It'll go down a little bit. Now, winds are currently blowing at around 6 miles per hour out of the east northeast. And what can I say? Maybe some storm, not storm. We're going to have perhaps some chance of rain in the afternoon. You know, every January, America's Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration comes out with an annual report detailing extreme weather events that occur in the United States. And that report has just been released. It was apparently just an above average year last year for weather when it comes to climate related damage. And that would be leading to losses last year of $45 billion nationwide. That compares to an average of $43.9 billion a year adjusted for inflation over the past 40 years. So global warming is, as you can see, having a very nominal effect on the actual damage being caused to the nation due to extreme weather. Now, NOAA, as it's known, then again, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, said there were 14 weather and climate disasters in 2019 that did cause financial losses exceeding $1 billion apiece. These billion-dollar-plus disasters included 8 severe storm events, 3 flooding events, 2 tropical cyclone events, and 1 wildfire. Now, the total cost of the U.S. billion-dollar disasters over the last 5 years from 2015 to 2019 exceeds some $525 billion now, with a five-year annual cost of about $106.3 billion, both of which are records. Even after adjusting for inflation, the U.S. experienced more than twice the number of billion-dollar disasters during the 2010s when compared to the 2000s. And the 2019 U.S. Climate Extremes Index, which tracks unusually high and lows in temperature, precipitation, drought, and tropical cyclones, was 14% above average and ranked in the upper third of what is now a 110-year running record. Last year's extremes included annual rainfall that was 4.84 inches above average. That means that global warming must be good for rain, creating what was then, though, the second wettest year on record in the United States. It was also a top 5 year for tornadoes, with over 1,500 reported across the United States. And the nation experienced $14 billion weather and climate disasters last year again. So quite a year for weather, I guess you could say, out there. All right. Well, good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, good evening, whatever the case might be, wherever you're at. You know, I didn't sleep a whole lot last night for whatever reason. It's 7 o'clock here. I think I was up at 5 o'clock, something like that, 4:40, 4:30, something like that, to start a little bit of preparation for this show. And that's just the way radio works, guys. You know, we don't have writers, we don't have researchers helping us out here, so we got to do what we can do. Now, what I'm going to do is, I haven't seen anybody pinging me, so I'm assuming we're going out okay. I don't know that for a fact, so I'm going to actually make my way over to the chat room that you can find at InsideTheEyeLive.com. And what you do once you're there is you click on that live chat button, or you can just go /, which is what I do because it's kind of cached in my browser there. So /_chat. I actually have to just type in LI and it's okay. And that will get me in the door. And I'm now clicking through and I am live. Thank you, Zap. Worst case scenario, Q is out of Tel Aviv. Wow, that's exciting stuff, Zap. Good to see you again, Zap. Happy New Year. He is, of course, our official archiver for Inside the Eye Live. So good to see Zap in the house. Windmiller is there. It's doing okay in the chat room. Telephone lines kind of going to be open up early here, and that would be something to the effect of just because, hey, why not? We're a listener call-in show. So you can call in at 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. You know, the big story, of course, geopolitically, has to be what's going on between the United States and Iran, with Donald Trump purportedly nowadays, because we never know, right? But taking out Qasem Soleimani, who was the head of the Al-Quds force of Iran, just outside a commercial airport. And of course, that has transpired into quite a lot of deaths since then. We've had the funeral where there was a stampede, some 50 people were killed. We've had the loss of a Ukrainian aircraft, 737-800, that was somehow taken out of the sky, whether it crashed or it broke apart or who knows what. Of course, U.S. intelligence is trying to say that this Ukrainian aircraft was brought down by missile, you know, basically faulty. I don't know if you want to call it faulty, but just really bad either air defense systems by Iran, by signals intelligence that fooled Iranian Iranian air defenses. Who knows what really brought it down right now? I don't trust American intelligence. Quite frankly, American intelligence services are insanely unreliable. Quite frankly, I found them to be, they're not just insanely unreliable, they're just willfully deceptive and dishonest. And that makes for things to be a little bit difficult to decipher if you're going to rely on U.S. intelligence for anything, at least what's released to the public. But anyways, it was quite an event. I mean, come on, I'll tell you, you know, different stories out there about this targeted assassination. And one of those is that he was actually there on a peace trip. He was brought there by the United States on a peace mission, basically to meet with the Iraqis to talk about something between the Saudis and Iranians and how to try to de-escalate the whole area. And that, honestly, knowing the Israelis, with all due respect, knowing the Israelis, that would be a reason why they would kill him, because the Israelis require and demand perpetual war. Jewish state, the state of Israel, the colony of globalist Jews, whatever you want to call it, it cannot survive in a peaceful environment. So if indeed Soleimani was actually there seeking to bring about some type of peace in the region, it would make sense that the Israelis would order their puppet Donald Trump to take down or to shoot at, you know, basically take him out with a drone strike. But who knows, you know, really, who knows? You know, we can all get all worked up about over all of these events, you know, but it's at the end of the day, who really knows? But I'll tell you, it's amazing, quite frankly, Trump's attitude. You know, they say that, you know, there was some 20, some, I don't know, dozens, it says, a couple dozen of missiles came down on the Al Asad air base inside of Iraq, which is one of the American air bases there. And of course, the Iranians are putting out something that there was extensive damage and some 80 people were killed, quite a few more wounded. The Americans are putting out the story that the Iranians gave us advanced knowledge through some embassies. We were able to clear our people out of the way and there were no casualties. So who knows again there? You know, you just have to wonder what's going on. And then what's interesting, Veterans Today had released a photo just a couple days ago showing Soleimani, the same very Soleimani, walking and cajoling with U.S. troops inside of Syria or Iraq. So Soleimani was known to actually be working with the Americans. And so I heard so many politicians, so many pundits, so many, let's just say, media whores, media spokespeople, media experts, whatever you want to call them, talking clearly that how this guy deserved to die. He's got blood on his hands and he's killed some 600 plus some odd American troops. I'm like, well, first of all, you idiots, he's a commander of a military organization. Tell me, how many deaths does various American commanders have on their hit? I mean, you're like making this out to be such a big deal. It's like, first of all, if you guys that want to sell this line about how Soleimani has all these American deaths on his hands, well, why aren't you calling for the drone strike of Tony Blair, the former UK prime minister? Why aren't you calling for the drone strike of the various neocons who got the United States into Iraq on BS pretenses to begin with? Why aren't you calling for the drone strike of virtually every single head of the Jewish mainstream media who were willfully promoting this war to get America involved in Iraq to begin with? And why aren't you calling for a drone strike of George Bush Jr.? Or is he really Jr.? I'm not sure he is Jr., but I think he's Jr. Why? But anyways, and Dick Cheney and Wormser and Pearl and Feith and all these other people that were involved and have deaths, American deaths on their hands. And furthermore, why aren't you calling for a direct strike and bombardment of Tel Aviv? Because it's the Israelis and Jews who have 9/11 on their hands. So again, the way that people go about with this childish, stupid, moronic, oh, he had death, he had American deaths on, like we're supposed to cry. Look, I'm all for all this. Take out Tel Aviv tomorrow. Take out Haifa tomorrow. Take out half of Israel tomorrow. Take over Dimona tomorrow. Don't sit there and cry on to national television, oh, the death on American death on his head. If you're not serious, just shut up. Seriously. If you're that stupid, shut up for a while. You know, I listened to some of George Washington. How stupid was I? I was listening to some of Donald Trump's speech. And I'll be honest, dude, can you get more Jewish than that? Seriously, can you get more Jewish than what this guy was doing? Unbelievably absurd. Listen to I'm going to play some of this just to get it out there, because Ben Shapiro, he's like, wow, this is great stuff about the attack. Wow, you got to listen to this. I'm just going to like skip through a few sections, but this is what a Jewish script sounds like, everybody.
Safe, and only minimal damage was sustained at our military bases. Our great American forces are prepared for anything. Iran appears to be standing down, which is a good thing for all parties concerned and a very good thing for the world. No American or Iraqi lives were lost because of the precautions taken, the dispersal of forces, and an early warning system that worked very well.
You know, it's funny about that when you look at Donald Trump speaking, right? He's like dancing between two teleprompters, it looks like. And like, you know, whoever wrote that script for him, they're like trying to sound so professional. Is it our dispersal of forces? It's like, you know, you can just read the unethical dishonesty of the script writer. You can smell it if you really listen, because there's a lot more going on here. Trump is being forced out, for instance, of Syria. Literally, he had set up a base to try to secure the oil fields, and basically, he's now being pushed out. He's now having to pull out his troops even further. With all due respect, Trump, listen, we want you as a commander in chief to get American troops out of the Middle East anyways. We're not asking you to stick around because your idiotic, moronic buddies over there in Israel are demanding that you somehow stick around because, oh, the poor Jews might have their northern flank exposed. To those of us who are American first nationalists, Israel is a parasitic pariah state that is an enemy of the American people. And why have you not bombed Tel Aviv yet? If you're such a gung-ho, let's go bomb the bad guys who are taking out the lives of American people. Why haven't you started a very open warfare against the Jewish people themselves? Because, you know, it's the Jewish people that are going after the American guns in America, that are saying we need to defang the American people. It is the Jewish organized Jewry. I don't know how you want to word it here. I don't care in some respect. It's Jewish organizations that are trying to stifle free speech in America. It is Jewish tech companies who are going after the rights of the American people. So to Mr. Trump, all of this posturing and pontificating about how bad Iran is, and yeah, they may be some bad apples in that government, and they're not playing ball with you and your little organization there in Israel. But to American nationalist guys, Trump needs to back down. Trump needs to get off his high horse, get his troops out of there, and let the Middle East take care of itself in whichever way it naturally will go. Because at the end of the day, isn't that what evolution is about anyways? Allowing the peoples of the world to evolve into whatever they are going to become. We don't have to worry about terrorists over there, because quite frankly, if your Department of Homeland Security is so stupid that it can't protect its borders, then you need to fire the people running the Department of Homeland Security. It's that simple. All this talk about how we got to fight them over there, that's just dumb. And, you know, Mr. Trump, I was thinking, you know, you want to just go bomb people because they, quote unquote, have the deaths of Americans on their hands. What are you doing to, let's say, the bankers? Are you looking to, like, maybe start drone striking some of these bankers? Are you looking to drone strike some of these pharmaceutical executives? You know, they've got a lot of deaths. You know, how about the fentanyl? How about the opioid crisis? Are you trying to tell me that somehow they don't deserve to be drone striked also? So again, Mr. Trump, you know, you can talk a big game, but when it comes down to executing, I'm talking about executing a game plan, you can't even put Hillary in jail, dude. Come on. Let's be honest. You can go sit there and cowardly. This is a cowardly act. I don't care how you call it, guys. But to lure and to attack somebody in a commercial airport is the most brazen act of cowardice I've ever seen, quite frankly, from a commander. This is typical Jewish cowardice. And if that guy was there actually to promote some peace, and you got guys, there's pictures now of Soleimani cajoling with American troops. And this is the guy that you're all claiming is trying to kill Americans. It doesn't hold a grain of salt. The fact of the matter is that the people that you drone strike the other day were some of the key architects in the defeat of this Israeli ISIS monstrosity that was created in the Middle East. That's who you took out. You took out the people that were most responsible for the defeat of what was known as the Islamic State inside of the Levant. Yet they want to sell this as we took out a bad guy terrorist. You want to take out a bad guy terrorist? You drone strike Netanyahu. You want to take out a bad guy terrorist? You drone strike Tony Blair. You drone strike Dick Cheney. You drone strike virtually 90% of the neocons. You absolutely take out the executives of our major media properties. That's how you start to win. All this, oh, winning, Trump is winning. No, you just got kicked out further from Syria. Not that we care, guys, because we want our troops out anyways. We, as American nationalists, want our troops out of the Middle East and put back into the United States and start to protect, A, the borders. You got a huge problem with your borders. Why aren't you protecting your borders? That's your job, Mr. Trump. Your job is to protect the United States, not to have troops over. And literally, I think we have something like troops in, 160-some-odd countries now, and there's only 189 or so on the planet. It's amazing, quite frankly. It's absolutely amazing how many troops we, the American people, it's probably the most far-flung empire the world has ever known. Of course, it's easy to be far-flung if what? You have bankers who can just print money to do whatever they want, and then they send their people out, right? But if that's the case, don't ask the American people to pay for it. Let the bankers pay for it. Don't ask the American people to pay for it. We didn't vote for all this. We didn't ask you to do all this. You know, it's interesting. The United States was in 8 major wars, okay? 8 major wars before the creation of the Federal Reserve. Now, of these 8 major wars, it's argued that we lost the War of 1812. But of these major wars, do you realize that the U.S. government never, ever asked the American people, at least did not take from the American people a penny? There were no taxes to take this money back. I hope that's right. I saw that article the other day. So I hope they wrote that article okay. It's like almost amazing that they actually did that. But that would be a pretty amazing phenomenon there. And ever since Jews come into power with the Federal Reserve, what, you guys can't manage the money properly? Got to ask everybody else to pay you back? Anyways, guys, chat room again, Inside the Ally. This is Inside the Eye Live Primetime. That's right. Inside the Eye Live prime time again. Thursday. What is it? It is for you guys. It is January the 9th. It's early morning now. We're just about 7:30 in the morning here in the Philippines. It's going to be a nice day, quite frankly. I'm looking forward to the day. I've been very, very busy here with the business here and getting some government stuff. I actually have meetings. My first meeting Guys, you know me, maybe you don't, and it's probably not, it's probably better. But nonetheless, I've already set up some meetings with the government here to go meet on certain issues, economic issues. So I've got my first meeting in Manila this coming week. I'm not here very long, so I'm basically going to do a quick meeting and get out type of thing. But it should be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to some new things coming into 2020 and looking forward to a great year for sure. Going to be going into a break, I think, in about a minute. Again, we have no vision anymore with this station, so we don't really know what is going on anymore. So we will try to time the breaks the best we can, everybody. It's just the best we can do, so we will continue to try to do the best we can. But I think we got about a minute to go before a break, but again, we don't know. What else? That's about, I guess, it on the Trump issue. I'll tell you, I was just not impressed, though. I just wasn't impressed with Trump's speech at all before the American people the other day. It was actually kind of silly, quite frankly, listening to this guy talk, because it just sounded just so darn Jewish.
By the last administration, F to nuclear breakout.
Oh, nuclear breakout.
Iran must abandon its nuclear ambitions and end its support for terrorism.
How about you get the Jews out of the terrorist business, Mr. Trump? Come on, dude.
Germany, France, Russia, and China to recognize this reality. They must now break away from the remnants of the Iran deal, or JCPOA.
Guys, that is an amazing, amazing, amazing well-written Jewish script there, dude. Dude, get a better script writer. My advice to you is if you're going to have to read this crap, try not to get so Jewish melodramatic stupidity out there. I mean, I don't know who falls for this crap anymore, but that was one of the dumbest things I had heard in quite some time. I actually listened to maybe half of it, and I'm like, man, this is like throw up stuff. Anyways, it's the Fetch Inside the LA primetime Thursday, January the 9th. Back with more after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the LA primetime Thursday, January the 9th, 2020. Wow, we're done with the teens, man. We are absolutely done with the teens. I'll tell you, probably a lot of parents out there saying, I wish I could be done with the teens too. But unfortunately, we got it. Well, that's for you anyways, unfortunately for you, right? But nonetheless, guys, we're having a great time here in the Philippines. I'm really enjoying my stay, to be honest with you. It's been really a nice time here. A lot of work. It's not play at all. It's 100% work, but I'm just enjoying myself. It's good to be home, so to speak, where I can sit back, relax, have a little bit of catered to a little bit of pampering, stuff like that. I've got some really great employees here working away. They are very conscientious. They're doing a great job. So that's a great thing. Of course, to those of you who have had to work or manage, you understand how great it is to have good people working for you. And I'm lucky we've got some very great people. So I'm looking forward to a great 2020, to be honest with you. And just going to, you know, it's early part of the year, stick it out. And we're just looking forward to a great 2020. What can I say? Chat room again, InsideTheEyeLive.com, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. And again, it's actually doing quite well for a Thursday. Some equisitors, haha, the Fetch becoming a homebody. You know what it is, guys? I have been traveling the world literally probably for the last, I don't know, 15 to 20 years. Think about that. And I just have not been able to really settle all that well because I've been traveling so much that, you know, I used to tell Emily here, I says, don't complain that I'm traveling, because if I'm not traveling, I'm not making money. And so consequently, you know, I embrace travel because travel is how I make my income. I'm an international type of guy. I'm an international. It's what I do. In other words, my value is overseas. I have a lot of unique insights. It's used by people in foreign markets. That's just what I do. It's a very unique position that I have in the economic, I don't know, the economic envelope. I don't know what you want to call it, but like the economic, it's anyways, it is what it is. I love traveling, but I've been having a lot of fun here, just kicking back. And what can I say? I'm at a loss for words. Fetch is at a loss for words, everybody. Call 911 and see what's happening. Anyways, it is listener-sponsored and supported radio. It does rely upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up, and running. So whatever you can do, as long as we are here, obviously, we still want you to support the network, because without the network, independent of whatever we say, we're still broadcasting here. So it does deserve some support, some recognition. So again, whatever you can do out there, definitely support the network. Now, the ITO Cat Report is proudly sponsored by the Graham Hart Show with Breiser. You can catch the Graham Hart Show with Breiser every Monday at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern on Cornwall Revolution Radio. And you can catch that at grism.blogspot.com. And again, live links are usually there. There's a sticky post up at the top of the page at grism.blogspot.com. So be sure to check out that show. Honestly, guys, I've been so busy. I don't know what you guys did this past week, but nonetheless, everybody, it sponsors the Cat Report. And we have kind of an interesting cat report. You know, a couple things. You know, obviously, being in the Philippines, I've got three cats. I've got Ming Ming, Spikers, and Pressy for Precious. Pressy still, like, befuddles me, man. I can just say, hey, Pressy, and she just looks like she doesn't hear me. So I think she just doesn't respond to that name. I should have probably named her something else. Ming Ming is a beautiful tabby, long-haired tabby cat. And over here, tabbies have some value. Someone offered us 14,000 peso, which is close to $300 for Ming Ming the other day. And like, wow. And then somebody came to me 2 days ago, or was it yesterday? Yesterday, they came to me to the office here, and I'm actually broadcasting from my office here where I have the fiber. And they said that we'd like to take your cat to Manila and actually Quezon City, which is north of Manila, and breed your cat. We have some others. I'm like, man, I don't want to do that. I don't want to put her in a cage just to get bred. Come on, man. I don't want that. So I had that offer yesterday. So good old Ming Ming, she's something. So, but the problem is that she just runs over to a particular house and camps out at this particular house. She's been sitting on the lap of the uncle there and the mother there and the father there. So she's basically been trying to adopt this other family. And the people I'm renting from, who actually live in Singapore, they called me and said, hey, your cat is over at my aunt's house. Can you please come get your cat? And I'm like, I guess. So I sent Emily out to go get good old Ming Ming, but Ming Ming has been kind of like forced to stay in a room for a while, trying to get her used to the house just a little bit. So she's a little bit better, but it's been something. But now the kittens, I got five additional kittens. None of them have names yet. And there's talk yesterday of how do we get rid of the kittens. The kittens are just tearing up my house. That's the problem. They're literally tearing up the house, and there's so much, you know, a little bit of urine. Cat urine is the worst, guys. And so they've been doing that inside my house, and it's just not a great thing to have happen. So we are looking now to get rid of four of the five kittens. And I got two white cats and then others. One looks like Spiker, and the other two are like mixed colors, you know, mixed. One is gray, tabby-ish looking. The other is just a three-color cat. And they're like, which one you want to keep? And I'm like, I want to keep the white one. I want to keep the white male. And they're like, no, we don't. They asked me like 10 times, like, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to keep the white one. So stop asking me. I've already told you what I want. And I said, do what you want. It's okay. You got to live with them. I'm flying back to Saudi soon, so it's okay. But yeah, we're going to probably be getting rid of four of the kittens. So guys, we're going to be cutting down to four cats soon, I hope. They are just literally tearing up. They're a lot of fun in a way, but they're just into everything, man. They just play and they run and they play and they run and they scratch and they tear things apart. And I'll tell you, they even tore apart, believe it or not, I have a bottle of Glade air freshener, you know, a can of Glade air freshener, and they tore that darn thing apart, literally broke the cap to pieces. I don't know how they did it. But nonetheless, I'm like, come on, man, come on. So anyways, we're looking to dump some of the cats, and hopefully that will happen reasonably soon. So I just can't wait, to be honest with you. But I'm leaving this next coming week, so it's okay if they don't, I guess. I won't have to deal with it. But it's a lot of work, quite frankly, to support and to maintain five different cats. So I'm looking forward to getting the cats at least thinned out. I don't want to cull them, but I want to thin them out. And we'll see how that works. Anyways, that's the ITEL Cat Report, again, proudly sponsored by who? Ah, Graham Hart. That's right, the Graham Hart Show with Breiser. Again, check it out every Monday at 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on grism.blogspot.com. And that goes out over what's known as Cornwall Revolution Radio, I believe is the answer, or the state studio.
Oy vey. Oy gewalt. It's like another shower.
Oy vey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
How do you run by you? It don't like you. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on boy and tears.
Oy vey!
Oy vey, everybody!
Oy vey!
The Oy vey moment is proudly sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored is now available from Andy himself at andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. Get your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit eurofolkradio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live link, or visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media. And just want to say that the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show is actually going through what we call rebranding this year. As Andy explained with me on an episode last week, the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show is a mouthful, and it's quite a lot of syllables. How many is it? The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show. 9 syllables, something like that. It's kind of a mouthful. So he's just calling it the ACH Show. And it's going to be called now the ACH Show. I probably will have to redo some bumper music, but that's we'll be doing all of these changes as we do, you know, do anyways. We'll get into that later, but we'll be making some changes. Hopefully, come late February is the guess here now, relative to branding a lot of this stuff. So again, it's called the ACH Show, everybody. So, but you can still visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. Another thing too, just real quick about Andy, if you haven't heard that show, you know, maybe he didn't say it, but you might want to get as many of the archives as possible. I think, because of the archiving costs and such, people are starting to reduce the amount of archiving they do. So if you don't want any of the shows, that's fine. Don't bother. But if you want some of the shows, you might want to start grabbing some of those archives now, because I think we're going to start, not we, but there's going to be some effort, I think, at ACH to just give you the last 50 or 60 shows and in a rolling 56 show basis, something like that. And when you do 4 shows a week, that's not a whole lot. That's just about 10 weeks worth of shows. And I can understand Andy's reasoning. So you might want to check that out. And just get some of the shows, some of the people that he's interviewed, over 100, few hundred, quite frankly. So check out his archives, get what you can, because they may not be there. Let's see, this week's Oy Vey moment. Where do I want to go? I think I'm going to go over first to the UK, and there's always something stupid that Jews are doing that kind of like make us look and say, man, you guys are morons. But they're deadly morons. They're seriously dangerous morons. I mean, these guys play to keeps, play for keeps, and they play to smash any opposition. And we have to respect that. This is a very dangerous, very well-funded, very vindictive. I think those are pretty good adjectives there, huh? But it's very vindictive and very aggressive foe. They do not tolerate any opposition. They control our countries. They control so much of our nation, so many of our institutions. And they want to continue that control, and they are not going to simply hand it over to you just because you talk about Jews a lot. People are going to have to get out there and work and understand that Jews represent an existential threat to our ways of life. And of course, our way of life is a Western way of life of free speech, self-determination, self-responsibility, fairness, integrity, honor. And I think for the most part, I don't think you will find many Jews disagreeing with me, but many of the traits of the West are not traits of Jewish culture. They're a completely foreign imposition upon our way of life. So when you go over to, let's say, the UK for one of the first of today's Oy Vey moments, you have a situation where police are investigating, get this, alleged anti-Semitism. Now, you have to ask yourself, really, how did Jews rise to a position of power where simply not liking them, voicing the fact that you don't like them, and that's not even the case necessarily here in this particular story, but somehow that can get you arrested. Aren't we really staring tyranny in the face? When you see the yarmulke, when you see the Jewish media, don't you see really the face of oppression and tyranny? Isn't that what the yarmulke now is starting to represent? This is the hat of tyranny. Whether it's the yarmulke or the traditional type of hats worn by the Orthodox Jewish community, these are really becoming symbols of tyranny within our lands. And a case in point here, you've got a police investigating again alleged anti-Semitism. But it's not just that, guys. They're going after members of the Labor Party. And what does that tell you? It tells you that if you have a political position, you voice the views of your constituency. So if you are a member of a political party and you are there by virtue of a democratic process wherein you are put into these various positions, well, then you are a representative of a subsection of the political discourse. Now, what the tyrannical Jewish community wants to say here is that there can be no political opposition. Now, lawyers are saying here that they will decide whether to bring criminal charges against former party members accused of, quote unquote, committing hate crimes. And the Met commissioner told LBC Radio yesterday that 6 people were arrested last year as part of this ongoing inquiry, and that 5 files have now been handed to the CPS. So essentially what Jews are saying to us is that in our Republican democratic systems, their allegations can simply get you unilaterally arrested And consequently, we don't have a functioning democracy anymore. We have a functioning Jewish totalitarian system. Now, there was apparently an investigation that was prompted by, quote-unquote, an internal labor dossier detailing anti-Semitic messages on social media. Well, we all know that that term is simply used by Jews to shut down political opposition. So consequently, we should view again the term anti-Semite as being, first of all, stupid, but second of all, a very dangerous threat to the American way of life, a very dangerous threat to the Western world itself. And it's not a joke. We know that Jews took glee in killing people that they accused of being anti-Semites. Now, I'm not advocating that people kill Jews because they're anti-Western. But how many Jews are going to be out there and saying, hey, we need to watch what we do here because this is a dangerous path we Jews are going down. Because if we keep going down this path, the radicals of our Jewish community are going to be calling for the heads of anybody that they call out to be an anti-Semite. Where is the Jewish angst here when it comes to just throwing out this charge willy-nilly? Because that's what they do. Now, in this particular case, now ongoing in the UK, there were some 45 cases. And one said, we shall rid the Jews who are a cancer to us all, or on us all. Well, what is wrong with that? I'm serious. What is wrong with that? I've seen Jews say that about the Western world all the time. I'm not calling for Jews to be arrested, but perhaps we should be. Perhaps every Jew who uses the term anti-Semite should be arrested, should be shunned, should be marginalized, should be reviled for being a disgusting human being that they are, because you can't use that term and not be a disgusting human being. You can't. Because no ethical, honest person tries to label someone as being subhuman in such a fashion. But it's like, hey, I'm a Jew. I can use it anytime I want. What is going on here? Now, if I have a bunch of Jewish people constantly calling people anti-Semites, constantly calling the police, trying to get people arrested, constantly trying to take away constitutional rights that shall not be infringed, like the right to bear arms, to protect ourselves against people like Jews who are trying to use the political process to bring about total anarchy and tyranny, then when does it become palatable for us to represent within our own circles that Jews are a cancer on us? Why is it, logically speaking, why is it a problem? Because Jews are saying that the anti-Semites must be routed, but the anti-Semite, you can replace that with cancer. It's the same term. It's the same effect. It's the same purpose. There's no difference. So why are you allowing these morons who are literally infiltrators inside of the Western institutions of government? Why are we giving them their way? Again, this is a direct assault, a form of warfare by Jews against the West. And it has to be recognized for that. These people are violent terrorists in their own right. Now, Speaking here before LBC, Dame Cressida, it says, it is for the CPS, which is Crown Prosecution Service, to decide. It is a very complex crime type that only we Jews know. They didn't say that. It is a very complex crime type, to be honest. There is a lot for them to look at and a lot for them to consider as to whether there is either sufficient evidence to charge or whether it is in the public interest to do so. Now, again, you got five men, 40s, 50s, and 60s, old enough to know the Jewish danger to the West, are being accused of crimes. Of what? Criticizing Jewish power. They're accused of publishing or distributing material likely to stir up racial hatred, contrary to the Public Order Act of 1986. Well, who wrote that act? How does that act affect our constitutional rights, or not in this case, but the rights of the Magna Carta? How does it affect British rights to free speech? Who was behind this act? Is this act a criminal act itself? And should those who pass the act be seen as what? Treason to the people of the UK. Servants and quislings to an occupying power. Because we've heard this act brought up time and time again in the UK about how somehow you can't criticize Herr Jew. It's very fascinating. Seriously. It's very, 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 very fascinating. Now, here's the point. If you have a particular power, and it is, by definition, its own definition, quite frankly, an infiltrating force. Jewish power is an infiltrating force. If it can be shown further, and it can very easily be shown in the United States, and I'm sure the UK, and for sure the UK, that this infiltrating force serves an occupying power, meaning the state of Israel or global Judaism, then these people inside the UK, US, but in this case the UK, they truly are an enemy of the British people. Now, it would be necessary to raise the emotional level to get people to move, to get people to act, so that they will go out and fund various political campaigns, participate in various political campaigns, such that they will be motivated to remove this cancerous element which Jews don't want to be viewed as. But see, you have to have a label, everybody. That's the point here. Everything within the human mind needs a label so that it can be identified. Especially as these things pertain to politics. You know, I think we're actually going to be going into a break. I'm going to actually lose some of this. Maybe we'll carry some of this over. It should be an interesting discussion. It's The Fetch. Inside the Ally Prime Time, everybody. Again, it's January the 9th, 2019, and I believe we're going into a break, so we'll be back right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. Apparently, I was back a few minutes ago, but you know, it's live radio, and we don't have a studio that lets us know when we're live. Go figure that one. I never quite figured that one out. I really miss Nighthawk, guys. I miss Nighthawk a lot when it comes to doing live radio. Because he was professional. At least he made an effort to make things professional. But nonetheless, it is what it is, everybody. So, I don't want to unmute that. So anyways, we're doing the best we can, everybody. Unfortunately, we're stuck to having a better podcast than live radio nowadays. But it's a live station, so what can we do? What can we do? Just keep moving is what you do typically. That's what they used to tell me in acting class. Just if you forget your lines, just keep moving. Ad lib if you have to. Just don't sit there. Okay. Let me see. I got some music in the background here. Hold on 1 second. Mute you out, dudes. Okay, fine. All right, you're gone. Anyways, again, it's start of hour number two here inside the ILI prime time. Again, January the 9th, 2019. Or not 2019, 2020. There's my first one of the year. 2020. The year of clarity on the Jewish problem. You know, one thing we're talking about here is politics and the issue of politics and how to affect change. And before we went into the break, we were talking about labels. And labels are something that you have to affix to things, because without having labels, you can't identify certain targets. So the idea that somehow, you know, and this is where you get into the hypocrisy here, and you have to understand very clear what's happening here and why any Jew who uses the term anti-Semite should be arrested for a hate crime. And it's because if you say something, again, anything about a Jewish person, you give them any name, and it quote-unquote is intended to heap hatred upon that person. Oy vey, oy vey. Well, guess what? Jews will try to accuse you of a hate crime. They'll try. And they'll call their buddies, and they'll call their donors, say, hey, look, I need the CPS, Crown Prosecution, or in America, too. We need them to go after this XYZ person. Well, tell me, what's the difference to using the word cancer to describe a Jewish person who is a cancer, and using the term anti-Semite to describe somebody that Jews don't like? See, the purpose or the intent is the exact same thing. It's just a different label. So the point here is that we are accepting and far too permissive of the Jewish term anti-Semite. And we're far too willing to go after anybody that Jews, of course, label as a quote-unquote an anti-Semite. But ultimately, that's just our own demise. As an organizational structure here in the West, we should view the term anti-Semitism, anti-Semite, as nothing less than Jewish hate speech, and we should call for the arrest and conviction of any Jew that seeks to use that term. In other words, it should be, you know, when you talk about how Jews are they need to stamp out anti-Semitism, well, we need equally to stamp out the use of Jews or the use by Jews of the term anti-Semite. Because they're one and the same at the end of the day. And one gives Jews all the advantage, and the other takes away all the advantage. So basically, it's the cowards and the yarmulkes assaulting everybody and getting away with it while nobody can defend themselves. And that's really what's at stake here when you talk about crimes, quote unquote, like in the UK, where you've got these, you know, I guess investigated for quote unquote heaping, you know, the Indecency Act, whatever that act is of 1986. So basically, guys, the point here is that labels are just that, labels. And when a Jew labels somebody an anti-Semite, let's be very clear. This is intended racist hatred by the Jewish person. And these people should be seen as racist, hatred-filled bigots. And again, they should be taken down. That's one point here. Now, another issue comes from various, of course, publications. Many of them are run by Jews. Now, the truth is anti-Semitic, because if I were to tell you that many publications were run by Jews, I'm telling you the truth. But Jews will call that anti-Semitic. So therefore, who is really more pragmatic, ethical, and honest here? The person who tells the truth, or the lying piece of trash garbage that screams and cries anti-Semite at every breath that they don't like or they don't like? So you had a situation going out in something called the Jewish Broadcasting Service. And there's a guy by the name of Dovid Efun, and he's probably one of the most rabidly race, big hatred bigots of the Jewish community, to use their terms. And he's saying here, Jews must not sit idly by while anti-Semitism surges in the United States. Well, first of all, Allgemeiner, I believe, is a German publication. We should tell Mr. Afoon, keep your stupid, can we use the term hook? Let me look. Does he got a hook nose? Let me look. It's kind of not a big hook nose, but hey, keep your little hook nose, okay? It's little. It's not big hook nose, dude. Don't worry. You're not a big hook nose. I mean, you don't cut that schnauzer, you know? But it's like, you know what? Keep your nose out of our business. Keep your racist, hate-filled bigotry out of American politics. That's what Americans should be telling Jews right now. We shouldn't be sitting idly by while Jews want to demand that they rule over everybody and not be criticized when their policies, remember, this doesn't come down ultimately to hatred of Jews. And you don't have to like them. I don't care. I remember a story my brother told back in the 1990s. He joined the Air Force, and he was actually in some pretty wild situations. Not personally, but he just missed them, so to speak. And he told me one time, and I know him. He's just the way he is, right? He hates everybody. He's just not, back then he was far from a sociable person. So he joined in the Air Force and he basically didn't get along with anybody. The blacks complained about him. There weren't any Jews because they don't serve in the military too much, but pretty much everyone complained about him. And he told me he got a call by the commander one day, said, Mr. Fetcher, please, can you sit down? And my brother sat down and said, what's the problem, sir? And he said, you know, you just can't seem to get along with anybody. You know, you seem to hate this guy or something to that effect. And he says, well, you know what, sir? I hate everybody. I'm not discriminatory here. I hate everybody. And that's perfectly fine. I don't have a problem with that. At least I know where you stand. And there's no reason why you should be forced to like anybody. Think about it for a second. How pathetic a culture do you have to be if you're Jewish, where you have to legislate people liking you? Are you out of your mind again? You're such a disgusting, loathsome culture that you're actually telling us, oh, if you don't like us, we're going to accuse you of being an anti-Semite, and then we're going to jail you because you don't like us. Okay. Really? Can you imagine how stupid these people really do sound, guys? We're dealing with, again, a moronic, childish culture that never grew up from their stupid days of believing that 6 million were killed and everybody's going to die if they don't yell first. And they're so stupid that they don't get the idea that the problems Jews face today is a result of their own actions. They actually walk around this world thinking that their shit doesn't stink, with their noses so held high, and they just act as if somehow they're little GDs and we're supposed to bow down to them every time they walk by us. Yet their policies, guys, the real issue here is their policies suck. The direction they are leading our countries suck. It is not to our benefit. It is only to the benefit of them and their heathenistic, disgusting culture. That's the truth. That's the real issue here. You hear this, oh, I felt motivated to fight anti-Semitism. Well, again, once you use that term, you're saying you hate people and you're guilty of a hate crime. Quoting here, the question of anti-Semitism or where this tragic saga ends, I think it's too big for any one person to answer. It spans millennia. How do we get rid of this? How do we root it out? People have tried, ideas have been presented, but the best that people seem to be able to come up with is some sort of agenda for containment, if you will. Well, we think the same thing about you Jews. How do we get rid of you? Because you're such a counter actually, how you're such a contradictive force. I don't even think that's, man, sometimes I shouldn't stay up all night. But anyways, your views run counter. Your actions run counter to everything we do in the West. It's that simple. And the problem, it spans millennia. We agree with you Jews. The problem is you Jews haven't changed for millennia. You're still stuck in the very Neanderthal. Maybe the Neanderthals are probably even far more evolved than you Jews were. This editor, and again, he influences tens of thousands of people, tens of thousands of Jews and those who are sympathetic to the Jewish cause. He says, the question that we have control over is how to respond to it. And I think it's incumbent upon us to think about if we are indeed living through a historic resurgence of anti-Semitism or even a rebirth of American anti-Semitism. If that is the case, we need to be sure it is never said that the beast of anti-Semitism reawakened on our watch and it did so unopposed, or it was met with timid resistance. So what he's said here, everybody, is that Jews are going to declare war on the American people, because you cannot be American. You cannot be British. You cannot be Swedish. You cannot be German. You cannot be Italian. You cannot be French if you're first and foremost Jewish. It's oxymoronic. Our cultures are not their culture. We don't walk around and twirl chickens by the neck and think that the crimes are going to go from us to them, or our sins are going to, come on, think about it. We don't go around and sit there and bite the penises of little children off and say, oh, you're now holy. We're not this way. It is a completely counter system to Western systems. We don't sit there and say, oy vey, if a Jew strikes a goy, it's okay, but if a goy strikes a Jew, he should be killed. No, we don't have these types of barbaric pre-medieval thinking within our cultural and religious establishments. It's actually not who we are. Now, we respect that our politicians are pretty barbaric, that our politicians are into pedophilia and a whole lot of other stuff, but we also know that Jews buy those people, not us. We don't have a talk at the table. We don't even have a seat at the table, let alone the ability to talk at the table. So this Jewish guy, he goes on to say, it's our job to formulate the most aggressive, compelling, and impactful response that we can in the face of such atrocities. What frickin' atrocities are they talking about? Seriously. What atrocities are they talking about? Where you hold a rally in Charlottesville and some woman dies, and you railroad some guy into some 469-year prison sentence. Is this the type of atrocity you're talking about? Or you arrest people because you don't like what they said? Because, oh, it hurt your feelings today because you're Jewish? Is it that type of atrocity you're talking about? Can you imagine the chutzpah of using the word atrocity here? Really? Are you telling us that the 50 to 60,000 American people killed by the opioid crisis last year alone isn't an atrocity? And the fact that it was run and managed by Jewish people isn't an atrocity? Where are you Jews going again with this argument? Because when I read these types of words coming from the Jewish community, I am looking at a loathsome, disgusting culture that simply wants to impose itself upon us and accuse us of the very crimes it is visibly doing to us on a daily basis. What type of atrocities, really, does this editor have in mind when he uses the term atrocities? It, quite frankly, doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Oh, anyways, it's the Fetch, everybody. Inside the Eye Live primetime. Staff are starting to come in the door. It's weird trying to do a radio show when you got people meandering all around you, quite frankly. It's just kind of bizarre. Anyways, it is what it is, right? We covered the Iranian thing. I don't know what to say about the Iranian thing, actually. I think I've covered enough about the Iranian thing. And I just kind of want to talk about anti-Semitism today. I don't know why, but I want to talk about anti-Semitism. You know, the let me pull up a quick story here that actually makes sense. You know, I'm not sure about Ilhan Omar. Well, once again, I have Ilhan Omar. She's always in the, you know, Ilhan Omar, the Somalian occupier, I guess, the communist agitator. I don't know what you want to call her, but she's complaining about economic warfare against Iran, despite backing BDS against Israel. I don't know. Stupid. A lot of the stuff I read in the media nowadays are really just kind of stupid. It seems like the press and the people who write really have an IQ challenge, something to that effect. The ADL put out a warning yesterday. It says the assassination apparently of Iranian Quds Force head Qasem Soleimani in a U.S. airstrike last week has led to a proliferation of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories by American white supremacists, far-left anti-Semites, and Iranian media. And that's what the ADL is warning yesterday. Actually, today for you guys. Yesterday for me. ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt said in a statement, "For now, these conspiracies are limited to the extremist fringe where anti-Semites typically look to any major world event as justification for their bigoted views." Well, again, Mr. Greenblatt's views are racist. Mr. Greenblatt's views are extremist. Mr. Greenblatt's views are fringe. I mean, I never even, who goes around thinking there's anti-Semites under every frickin' rock? Unless you're a Jew. Really, seriously, who does that? Now, ADL, he says they're on the fringe. But he says, our concern is this steady drumbeat of anti-Israel. Mr. Greenblatt, head of the ADL, again, when you throw as your very first word out there that somehow you're concerned about anti-Israeli sentiment, well, you're basically telling us that you're an Israeli operation. You're an Israeli operative yourself. And for us Americans, the very fact that you're raising these issues points to the fact that there's a huge problem within Jewish political power structures in America. Why is it that every time something happens, Jews raise their ugly heads and say, that's anti-Israel? Why is that? What is it about being pro-American, pro-United States, pro-Western? Why is that viewed as being, quote-unquote, anti-Israel? Isn't that really saying by default that Israel is against the West, that therefore Israel is an enemy of the West? Now, the ADL listed some of the conspiracies. Some, I believe, Hunter Wallace, I believe he's somebody within our circle here, who said the Soleimani killing was the beginning of World War Jew, in which Jewish donors to the Republican Party were engineering a Jewish war with Iran. Kevin McDonald, an important formulator of white supremacist ideology and author of several pseudo-academic, come on, they're academic books, you morons. Calling it pseudo is just racist, hate-filled bigotry by Jews. Said that supporting the strike wanted a non-white U.S. while once again Israel's getting the U.S. to fight its war. I'm not sure what they said there, said that those supporting the strike wanted a non-white U.S., while once again Israel's getting the U.S. to... Okay, I understand what that's saying. A notorious anti-Semite and former KKK leader David Duke. See how they use their racist hatred and bigotry in the Jewish community, because David Duke has been so far removed from the KKK that this is nothing but pure, unabridged dishonesty and unethicalness from the Jewish community here, says that the assassination was a result of Zio U.S. traitors, and praised Soleimani for supposedly, it's not supposedly, he did protect Syrian Christians. That's actually true. Duke's correct about that. The real evil is the Zionist warmongers who are leading Trump and America into hell. Nothing wrong with that. I don't see a problem with that. Why do Jews feel a right then to use hate speech, which means to call somebody an anti-Semite? Because what's wrong with the, what really is wrong with this? Why do you use a term that you know is seeking to steep hatred upon somebody? Paul Nalin. Writing, the kikes who own Orange Man, Paul Nalin wrote this, huh? The kikes who own Orange Man were going to have their war with Iran one way or another. See, here's the thing about war with Iran. And this is just, it looks like we have 1 minute, but okay, we'll try to fit something in. The key thing about war with Iran, the United States can't win and the Iranians can't win. In a way, it's not mutually assured destruction, but it's really mutually assured devastation to each country's forces. The Americans cannot, with all the bluff, they cannot defend against the Iranian onslaught. They cannot. And right now, you've got what? 60,000 troops or so ringing Iran, something to that effect. But they're all kind of small, dispersed. And yeah, there can be a lot of headaches caused by that. All right, I hear we're going into a break, everybody. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye. All right, everybody, welcome back. Got some studio support there. Thank you very much for that, guys. It's the way it should run all the time, but thank you very much. It's very well appreciated. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live Primetime. Again, it's January the 9th, 2020. I almost said 19, everybody. I almost said 19, but 2020. We were talking about the ADL, you know, and how it's going after release. A lot of people within our circles, you know, a lot of these guys that they're mentioning here, we've had on our shows. David, I haven't had David Duke on, but we've had, I think, Hunter Wallace, or was that Joyce? Somebody else. I don't think Hunter Wallace has been on, but we've had somebody close to him. Kevin McDonald's been on. David Duke, of course, people around David Duke have been on. Jefferson, Trump has now fulfilled the wishes of Mossad. That's actually a true statement. I don't know what the ADL's complaining about. The intensely anti-Zionist Philip Weiss, who runs the website Mondo Weiss, okay, said Trump was using the strike, that would be the strike against Qasem Soleimani, to gain campaign contributions from wealthy Jews. Look who is pleased by the attack, Israel. No doubt Sheldon Adelson, Trump's biggest donor as well. And that's cynical, but I wouldn't doubt that. I think that's something that should be looked into. Former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, she's been on the show, who's been accused of, quote-unquote, anti-Semitism. Oh, my gosh. Several times tweeted, guaranteed Trump's statement about Soleimani and Iran was written in Israel. Actually, I'm sure. It was, quite frankly. Another, the story, E. Michael Jones was referenced in this article, but it shows you just how mainstream, really, our messages is becoming. Because a lot of the people that we've interviewed here on the show, or at least are periphery to this show, are really starting to get mainstream views or mainstream publicity by various Jewish organizations as they seek to once again stamp out opposition to their hatred of our nation. And I'm kind of curious if we could start selling that line, Jews hate America. It's kind of true, though. Jews do hate America. They hate everything America stands for. Hungary. Let me take this call. Good, always good to hear from Mr. Frank. Frank, hi. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live Primetime.
Hey, Dennis. Am I off mute?
Yes, you are, because I heard the studio, so I wasn't doing something. So you're off mute today.
Cool.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, Cynthia McKinney, huh?
Yeah, Cynthia McKinney even. Get that, man. She's actually being listed in the various, in that particular ADL article. So how cool is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you. You know, I mean, we say it over and over again, but anti-Semitism, the purpose behind them labeling someone that is to destroy their whole life.
Yeah, it's the ultimate form of
destroy
hate
their family.
Speech. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of these people, their families don't even really understand or aren't even on board with what they talk about. I would say just because they're ignorant, but they're not even on board, but they'll go and try and destroy those people too. That's the Jew.
No, it's really true. And I think it's so patently unfair and unethical. Yet you and I both know this is true. So how can we, I don't know why we allow them to continue to use the phrase anymore. It's so clearly, to use their definition, Frank, a form of hate speech, that any Jew that uses it should be arrested immediately. I mean, ultimately,
well, I mean,
that's where it would be great to get
to. We're dangerous or violent. You know, they're using that label, labeling someone who disagrees with them or who's critical of Israel or organized Jewry, the Jewish community, an anti-Semite, and putting that out there. They're basically saying, we want this person destroyed.
Correct.
That's intellectual violence, right?
That's 100% correct. That's exactly what they're trying to do, too. And then Jews instinctively know how to respond. You know, once that person gets labeled, you can't, again, we should view that as hate speech, and every Jew should be arrested. That's where I believe we need to start going in that direction. Let people start saying, hey, this is hate speech. We need to have that Jew arrested. And make this.
Well, if there's any doubt where I stand, I'm way past my prime. I couldn't keep up nowadays, but I tell you, I would do my darndest. I would go through some type of, you know, program of getting back into some kind of shape so I could help. But if we ever did have a president, a real president that represented us, and they declared war on Israel and international Jewry, I would go down to the Marine recruiter or wherever, and I would sign up because, you know, I would love to be in a war like that, a real just war for, you know, an existential war. Because these people, I tell you, I was listening to Frederick C. Blackburn's Breakfast Club last night. I don't know when it aired. I forget when it airs live because I don't pay that close attention. But now, you know, now that I have this listen line, I can listen.
Yeah.
They also play some of your stuff on there too.
Yeah, courtesy of Eurofolk, you know,
like
Radio.
From a couple
yeah.
weeks ago.
Yeah, courtesy of Eurofolk Radio.
Yeah, Eurofolk Radio. But I'm telling you, his 2 hours last night, and I believe it was broadcast yesterday. I don't know if
it's Wednesday night.
It was live when I was listening.
It's Wednesday night, Frank, 8 to 10 p.m. on the Spreaker Radio Network. It's also being simulcast at Eurofolk Radio.
Yeah, and that's Eastern time. Mm-hmm. 8 to 10, and that's when I heard it. And I'm telling you what, I mean, a lot of that stuff I had heard before. Some of it, I think I was kind of new, but you know, it just reinforces, it reaffirms that these people have been at war with us and openly at war with us for hundreds, you know, thousands of years, I guess. I did have one thing though. Hey, do you know, do they have archives over there? I'd love for some people to be able to go back and hear that.
Of course, of course. All these shows are archived.
Hey, well, you know, some good news. There are, like, North Carolina is made up of 100 counties.
Okay.
And there are counties in North Carolina and others, apparently, where they're declaring that they're a Second Amendment sanctuary. Lincoln County, North Carolina, which is to the northeast of where I am, I don't get up that way very much, but their county commissioners voted unanimously a couple nights ago. I saw the report on my local news that they declared themselves a Second Amendment sanctuary, and it was unanimous. There was one guy that was kind of a holdout, but he said, well, I'm not going to be the only holdout. He said, you know what? These are smart people, and I'm not going to stand against them. I'm going to go along with it too. So it was unanimous. But, you know, basically, I guess what it means is any unconstitutional, any Second Amendment policies put forth by the federal government, they're not gonna enforce them. And the report from the local I think it was ABC. They said that there are a lot of counties are doing this. It was either counties and municipalities, but they're passing these laws. Another one, for example, here in North Carolina is Rutherfordton County, North Carolina, and apparently that's where Lincoln County basically got their template. But a lot of counties are starting to do this now. This thing up in Virginia, I believe it's scheduled for January the 20th, and you know it's kind of strange to me that it coincides with the federal holiday, the Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And, you know, that would be a good way for them to try and connect it with, you know, pro-Second Amendment is anti, you know, it's white supremacism and all of that. So I don't know. Apparently there's supposed to be a lot of people there. I won't be there. I don't do large crowds. I don't trust a lot of people. And I'm kind of like your brother. I hate to tell people this kind of, cause it's going to make me sound like a real a-hole, but I don't like people in general. I really don't. I really disdain Jews, but I find that I just can't even talk to people because they're so far gone. I mean, even white people, even white males, even my family members. I mean, they're not, we don't even speak the same language. I'm like, you know, I might as well be speaking Martian.
You know, that's true, dude. I hear the same complaint about this issue in Saudi, you know, because I'm in the expatriate community. I get, you know, some Americans where I'm working, the government said you must hire a percentage of Americans. So we've got more Americans this year than in the past. And the one guy told me the exact same thing. He says, you know, I find it, because he understands what we're doing, what I'm doing. And he said, you know, I find it harder to talk to Americans than anybody else. He says, sometimes they're just so brain dead, I can't get through to them either. I'm like, yeah, I hear you.
They just wallow in their ignorance, and they've been vaccinated. They've been inoculated against hearing truth, a lot of people. And I'm like, okay, I just made a really clear, easy to digest point, and they don't even know what the hell I just said. I use like common language and everything, and they're like, yeah, I heard on, you know, Rush Limbaugh that, you know, then they're cheerleading Trump, you know, for attacking, you know, these evil Iranians. And I'm like, I'm telling you, man, I mean, the orange man, as people call him, I mean, he's a clown, man. He's disgusting. He's pathetic. He's embarrassing. I mean, you know, I mean, you could just almost see the puppet strings. I mean, he's their bitch. He is their bitch.
You almost could.
And he's not going to stand up for us.
No, no. Yeah, what I saw yesterday.
You know, a couple of good things. He said he got it in the lexicon that, you know, the fake news media. So whenever one of his supporters says, well, you know, the news media says this, I'm like, yeah, but that's the fake news. You can't believe that. I said, this Iranian stuff that you're hearing about in the news. I said, why would you believe that? Even your own guy, Trump, said that it's the fake news. And you know, most of them, I can't even get into who controls him because, I mean, that would just be like, you know, they just couldn't handle that at all. But, you know, it shows another thing too, though. I don't think there's any political solution to this. I mean, we have to be honest. They are so powerful. We can't at the same time say, well, you know, Trump should be able to overcome all that. Personally, I would like to see him at least try, but I don't think he's trying. But if, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, if he tried, they would kill him. Anybody that gets in there, certainly at the national level, that tries to represent the interests of the American people, of Western civilization, of America, of the Constitution, they'll kill them. They're not going to put up with that. So really, where do we go from here?
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum for sure, because even the kids nowadays, Frank, the Gen X's, the Gen Z's, they're becoming even more extremist right than our, like, people like you and I. And they are understanding now that this is a replacement game in America, and they're even more extreme than we are. Some of the ones that are really woke, the real woke, they're getting it. And they're saying, hey, look, you know, if there's no political solution to, then where do we go? And it looks like the Jewish media, the Jewish system is really trying to block out any meaningful rise of a counter narrative or political narrative to what they've got in play, which means they basically are saying, we want to rule over you. And that's never a great thing. That always leads to tyranny, and we're kind of like in a semi-tyranny now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't blame people for being more right-wing than we are, because they got to live with it, you know, for a long time to come. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I'm more right-wing than I let on. I mean, I'm more anti-Jew than I let on the radio, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. I'm holding back when I'm on air.
Yeah, we all do. Imagine. Even Fetch has to hold back, man.
All right, man. I'll let you go.
Thanks. That's Frank, everybody. Telephone lines you like to call in, everybody, is 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. You know, part of the problem we have in the West really is twofold. Well, it's manyfold, but one of those is the underlying transgender feminist movement that we see out there. And we have to look at where victories are taking place. One of those is in Hungary and what they have done now. Feminism, as we all know, it's a social / political movement. It's not an economic discipline. It's just not. Certainly not. It's not on par, let's say, with mathematics, economics, business administration, or any of these other academics. So at best, it is a subset of a complex set of issues, a complex set of ideas. And it has basically been weaving its way into various history departments around the world as if somehow it's this great claim to some historical fame. And really, these types of curriculums need to be rooted out. So Hungary is now been working overtime trying to stamp out a lot of this disgusting transgender feminist agenda. And Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban and his Fidesz party have passed legislation now to abolish officially gender studies in Hungary as an area of official study. Now, Hungary's Deputy Prime Minister Zsolt Zemgyen has stated that such programs have no business in universities as they represent an ideology and not a science. And with a market profile close to zero, which is very true. Similarly, Orban's chief of staff, Gergely Gulyas, I'm terrible with names, said that the Hungarian government is of the clear view that people are born either men or women. They lead their lives the way they think best, and the Hungarian state does not wish to spend public funds on education in this area. So that's all a very good thing here. Of course, such efforts to abolish clearly non-academic programs from the university will be considered an authoritarian and anti-democratic push by such bastions of liberal left propaganda as the Harvard Journal of Law and Gender. Boy, that's an important sounding publication, eh? The policy is naturally opposed by the Hungarian-based Soros-funded CEU, Central European University, which sees the move as an attempt at censoring academic curricula. Well, I'll tell you what, let us talk about the Holocaust, and then tell me about what's being censored, Mr. Soros, and to the rest of you in the transgender community. The university, after all, is sacred ground, they go on to say, and by these lights, the German university of the 30s were well within their mandate to espouse and promote the doctrines of German National Socialist ideology adopted in the name of progress, justice, and freedom from oppression. Which, again, it was back then, because we had just come out of a Jewish-controlled Weimar Republic. So I guess it would actually have made sense in context in the day. Orban's surgical strike against the CEU is better understood as a reasonable effort to limit Soros's totalitarian meddling in the education business and conduct of an independent democratic nation, which is all very, very true. Orban realizes that what he calls the Soros plan entails transforming Europe and moving it towards a post-Christian and post-national era. The CEU has now relocated its Budapest campus to Vienna, where it can persist unmolested in its aim to undermine Western civilization. So as you can see, the language being used here is very much language we are using, and that's where Jewish elements are seeking to undermine Western civilization. So if you can imagine, you know, we're often told that Jews don't behave as, you know, they're all individual units. You can't treat them all as being one and the same. But once this actually happened, you know, you've had criticism about this move coming in from all over the place. Quoting here, every undemocratic government wants to control the knowledge, production, and sexuality, which explains why gender studies become the target in the first place, said Andrea Peto, a professor of gender studies at Central. Again, these guys are just pushing their agenda. I'm saying it very simple. If Jews want us to be able to talk about the Holocaust and how Jews did not kill 6 million, how the numbers are fraud, how most quote-unquote genocides / Holocausts of the 1900s were done by Jews, then, okay, you might have a place to argue here. But as long as Jews are fighting against keeping various curricula out, by keeping even ideas out of the public discourse, Jews, quite frankly, don't have a place to stand. I'm not sure what they're complaining about here. So feminist ideologues, you know, they're protesting that they are the target of unfounded criticism while apprehensive about their career prospects. Well, first of all, again, the whole thing has zero market coverage, zero market exposure. If you remove it from the university, there's no demand for this anywhere. So the idea that we should all keep moving forward with feminist transgender studies is absolutely insane. And in fact, in another challenge now to the transgender movement, which is really so dishonest and unethical to girls in our countries, you know, there are 5 states now that may require public school athletes to compete according to biological sex, which is actually would probably hurt people out there, I know, that are just identifying. But, you know, you look at some of these men running against women or girls for that matter, young women. It's so pathetic. You know, these people are such losers to even consider this type of behavior. Now, the bills have been introduced in New Hampshire, Washington, Georgia, Tennessee, and Missouri. Lawmakers are specifically concerned about biological female athletes facing unfair competition, which is what it is, from biological males who I quote-unquote identify, pretend they're girls just so they can go out there and compete. Now, Republican State Representative Bruce Griffey said last month that when he introduced the measure that it could be up to $10,000 civil penalty for any official who intentionally breaks this ruling here. Likewise, in Washington State, GOP State Representative Brad Klippert of Kennewick proposed HB 2201 to prevent students whose sex assigned at birth was male from participating in individual competition sports intended for female students. And that really is how it should be. Every state should rise up against transgender tyranny. Listen to the NBA, okay? I got a great thing for the NBA, okay? Here's what you do. You create a new basketball team and you call it the Brooklyn Queens, okay? And you fill it with nothing but transgender athletes and you let them participate in the women's NBA. What is it called? The WBA, Women's Basketball Association? Again, to all the Jewish owners out there, create a new team, call it the Brooklyn Queens or whatever you want to call it, and literally populate it with nothing but transgender athletes. and then sell this to the world about how great transgender athletes really are and let them play against all the women in the WBA. A great test of your philosophy. It'll be a great test of your ideology, I should say. So it should be very, very fascinating, quite frankly. If you Jews can pull that off, I would even go see. I might pay you a dollar or two to see that game. That actually might be worth it. You know, they had the Golden Globes, I think it is, something like that. And I don't know who the host was, Gervish or some strange thing like that. But he had quite a fun take on the Globes and how important people are out there at the Golden Globes. And I enjoyed it. So I thought, here's a small take that might be worth it. See if this will play loud. Of course, helps if you cue things up properly, everybody. And I always forget to do that. But fortunately, I'm kind of a sane mind today.
It's the last time. Who cares? Oh, Apple roared into the TV game with a morning show. A superb drama. Yeah. A superb drama about the importance of dignity and doing the right thing, made by a company that runs sweatshops in China. So, well, you say you're woke, but the companies you work for, I mean, unbelievable. Apple, Amazon, Disney. If ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, wouldn't you? So, if you do win an award tonight, don't use it as a platform to make a political speech, right? You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world. Most of you spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg. So, if you win, right, come up, accept your little award, thank your agent and your God. So, it's already 3 hours long. Right, let's do the first award. The first award.
Yeah, it was a great little monologue he gave to start that. Something like 7 to 8 minutes long, but he really ripped into it. And had, I'm sure, some of the people sweating out there and a little bit uncomfortable with how he went about going after these people. But nonetheless, it was well worth the listen. If you hear it, or you can find it, whether it's on Facebook or some other venue that you can pick this thing up, definitely give it a listen because it's quite funny and well worth your time for sure. Anyways, just want to say again, programming note for this Saturday, 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern, we're going to have a guest, Jan Lamprecht from History Reviewed is going to be coming on to the show. It's always a great time with Jan. We will be visiting many of the issues going on in South Africa. So be sure to tune in for Inside the Eye Live Saturday, 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. Again, Jan Lamprecht will be coming onto the show at 11 o'clock a.m. And we might keep him for an extended period. So you're going to definitely want to tune into that. For now, everybody, it's the Fetch saying good night to you. Good late afternoon. Have a great dinner. But for me, it's breakfast time here in the Philippines, coming up on 9 o'clock in the morning. Thanks for listening, everybody. Been a good time today. Thanks again. Talk to you Saturday again, Eastern.